The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Tom Fairbanks. Tom is engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. And Tom, you know very well what day it is. It's Friday,
the 13th of July,
and already, true to form, your day is off to a horrible start with car trouble.
Well, yeah, it for a while there, I wasn't sure if I was going to get it started, but finally figured it out, which may be a little late this morning. I apologize.
Friday the 13th. We are live at KVOI AM 1030. We're streaming our program. That means worldwide live listening and podcasts of the show. You can hear that at buckmastershow.com. Our media partners, these are folks who support us with prominently displaying the Buckmaster Show logo on the homepage of their websites, TucsonSentinel.com, the Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun. Tucson Media Group, which includes in their portfolio of Tucson-based publications, Inside Tucson Business, and the Tucson Weekly. Our Friday Focus interview this afternoon, Pima County Sheriff Mark Napier is with us. Sheriff Napier, how are you, sir?
I'm very well. It's Friday. It looks like it's clouding up. We might get some monsoon activity today.
I hope so. Also, in the conversation with us today, Joe Ferguson, Joe, political writer for the Arizona Daily Star. Joe, how are you? How is your week?
It's going well. Thanks,
going well?
Bill.
Very good. Sheriff, let's begin with, we had the chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors with us on the program yesterday, Richard Elias. And as you know, Richard would like to see ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, have no presence at your jail, in the Pima County Jail.
No, I understand that, and I appreciate his sentiments. Richard and I get along very well. That doesn't mean we agree about everything, but we do get along and have a relationship built on mutual respect, which I really value. The problem is a thorny one for sheriffs across the country. It's not unique to Pima County, and that involves the issue of ICE detainers and how sheriffs address these things. ICE detainer has no legal basis for a sheriff to extend the detention of an individual on local charges. So some sheriffs have decided that they're just going to ignore ICE detainers. What an ICE detainer is a federal law enforcement agency saying we have a valid criminal justice reason for detaining this person. Now, I don't think that sheriffs should ignore that because there is a presenting public safety interest. The federal government is communicating to the sheriff that we need to extend the detention of this. But that detainer in itself does not provide me a legal basis to do so. So some sheriffs are simply ignoring them and letting people go and hoping for the best, which is a bad public policy state. Other sheriffs are at their own jeopardy of liability and being sued. I'm going ahead and extending detention as a courtesy to ICE. Both of these solutions are bad solutions. As you know, I'm very involved in the world of sheriffs. I'm involved in the National Sheriffs Association and Major County Sheriffs of America. And they have come up with the idea that of the best practices approach is if you can do so, to embed ICE in your facility so you can do direct handoffs, which circumnavigates this whole thorny issue of how to address ICE detainers. Currently, there are about 70 to 80 people in our detention facility who have ICE detainers, and that's out of 1,900, so it's a relatively small percentage. But all I'm trying to do is implement a best practices approach to what is a very difficult public safety problem that doesn't have a good solution yet. It just doesn't.
Joe, would you like to join in on this topic?
You're calling it a public safety problem with no good solution, but let's talk about those 70 detainers for a moment. What are we talking about here? What are those detainers based off of? What is the federal government concern? What are we talking about specifically? What's the nature of it? Are we talking overstaying a visa, a question about their citizenship? I mean, what are we talking about here? What kind of people are they?
Well, it could be any number of things. So there isn't like a cookie cutter, Joe, where I could say that all ICE detainers are based on X. So I really can't give you a good answer to that, other than ICE has communicated to me as the elected sheriff of our county that, Sheriff, we have a federal criminal justice reason for the extension of detention of this person. Now, let's be clear. The person is in jail because they've committed a crime in our jurisdiction. So that's the first point. The second point is that they're in this country without proper documentation. And the third point is that ICE has communicated to me that there is a federal criminal justice reason for them to detain the person. I think it would be an abdication of my responsibility to the people of Pima County to ignore those things. So of those 80, I don't know what percentage are people that ICE has identified as dangerous criminals versus merely an immigration violation.
They can't give you that information?
Well, it's dynamic, okay. Because it changes daily based on the population of the jail. So it's kind of a moving target. And really, when a federal criminal justice agency says to me, Sheriff, we have valid criminal justice documentation that says that we need to detain this person, I really don't go into a lot of detail with them. I trust them. They're my strategic partners in this, and that they have a valid reason. And they present me with documentation that indicates so.
What about you're very active in sheriff's associations. You communicate with all the other sheriffs in Arizona. What are their feelings? Is this dividing the sheriffs?
No, I think I wouldn't say, Bill, it's dividing the sheriffs, but I think it is an issue that all sheriffs are grappling with. We're actually, and despite Richard's objection to this, we're very fortunate to have a good solution. And honestly, I know that Richard will hate this. The best solution is to embed ICE in your facility so you can do direct handoffs. That's the National Sheriff's Association recognizes that, as does the major county sheriffs. Sheriff in Coconino County is currently being sued by the ACLU because he decided he was going to extend the detention of somebody. So he's currently being sued. Other sheriffs do what I think is a bad solution, which is make their department a 287G department, which is cross-certify their deputies as immigration officers. I think that is a terrible solution. So what I'm trying to do is simply implement what is the best solution to a really thorny problem that's out there.
And who has control of the jail ultimately?
By law and by the will of the voters, it's the sheriff. The sheriff has statutory responsibility. The county attorney's office made clear that in a legal opinion that the operation and administration of the jail is by Arizona law and statute the responsibility of the sitting sheriff.
The decline in the jail population, does that have anything to do with that multi-million dollar grant that you've been working on?
Well, we're working very hard to make sure that the people that are in our jail are the right people, that we're not extending detention of people that don't present a public safety problem. Since I took office in January of 17, the population of the jail stayed pretty consistent around 1800 to 1900. It has not moved markedly. But we're implementing a lot of strategies to make sure that we're really looking at those people in the jail and seeing, you know, why are they there? Is that extension of detention really necessary? So we're working very hard on social justice issues, mental health issues in our facility, and making sure that we're incarcerating the right people and taking care of those people. I would put a plug out for our jail. They just engaged in a self-accreditation process. They did this willingly. There was nothing compelling them to do that. Had an outside entity come in, review all of our policies and practices, and our jail now is nationally accredited as a constitutionally run jail. And I'm really proud of our people for doing that.
Matthew has called us at 790-2040. Hey, Matthew, what's on your mind?
Well, first of all, I want to say, Sheriff Napier, you are a very competent person. You're probably one of the most competent people who's been elected to the sheriff position, and you are a very nice person.
Thank you.
I don't think there's any bias in you at all. I think you are so I want to direct my comments to you with that, saying that, because I really want you to succeed. And I think that the accommodation that you recently reached with the Board of Supervisors regarding the federal grant is the type of strategy you need to work with the board. The board represents a community, and this is a southwestern community that has a long-standing history of migrants moving in and out of Tucson that come from different parts of the world. And we are also a community that receives a lot of we have federal recognition to receive migrants in this community. So it's not surprising that we're going to have that type of community. And I just urge you to reconsider your position, seek some accommodation with the board and with Supervisor Elias that's in the best interest of your department. And I know you can do that because you're a very, you think these things through, and you are willing to change your mind if you find a better way to do things. Thank
okay.
you. Bye.
Well, thank you for the kind comments, Matthew. The problem is, and I wish I could find it, Matthew, and this is just not unique to me. It's unique to the 3,080 sheriffs across our country, a better way to solve this problem. And I really don't think the solution to the problem is to ignore the presence of an ICE detainer and simply open the door and allow people back into the community without knowing the scope and nature of the presenting public safety danger. Now, some of these people may have simply overstayed. I understand that. But it's really not for me to scrutinize the fact that when a federal law enforcement agency comes to me and says, Sheriff, we have a presenting clear public safety reason to detain this person, I should cooperate with those federal authorities. I think there may be some legislative solutions on the horizon, some other ways for me to handle this. But right now, I'm simply trying to do the very best that we can with a very difficult situation.
We're going to take a break right here. Joe Ferguson, stick around. Joe from the Arizona Daily Star is with us in studio, as is the sheriff of Pima County, Mark Napier. First, I want to tell all of our listeners about my favorite bakery in town. Sheriff, do you know what a Danish kringle is?
No, but it sounds low-calorie and very tasty.
It is. I don't know how low calorie it is, but it is.
I convinced myself of that, Bill.
Yeah, it's very tasty. And it is can be found at Mona's Danish Bakery. Mona's at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's has such great bread for, they do all that baking, of course, very early in the morning, and it's all ready and fresh for you right now for your lunch.
And it smells wonderful when you go in there, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It does. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Go to my website, buckmastershow.com. There's a link to Mona's Danish Bakery. And all of the fine partners, all of our sponsors who make this program possible. We'll be right back. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Monday during the noon hour, the Monday Political Face-Off features John Munger and Jeff Rogers. Also, one of the nation's most successful high school football coaches, Coach Jeff Skurin, joins us. Buckmaster during the noon hour on AM 1030 KVOI Tucson's Voice. We've got worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Back with you on the Buckmaster Show. Of course, we're here on a Friday afternoon, but we also are with you. Perhaps you're listening to the re-airing of the program Saturday morning from 7 to 8 on KVOI. Joe Ferguson is here. Joe primarily writes about politics for the Arizona Daily Star, and Sheriff Mark Napier, who had a great trip. I followed your trip, Sheriff. Pretty much 3 weeks, you and your lovely wife over in Europe enjoyed looking at the pictures. It looks like you guys were doing kind of a pub crawl, as they say.
Well, that was the pictures that made Facebook.
If it's Monday, we're on Grafton Street in Dublin having...
Yeah, we were at Temple Bar. You've got to go there.
Oh, yeah.
In Dublin. But I'll tell you, the thing to me is I was going to be a history teacher were I not a police officer, and to be on the beaches of Normandy and Point de Hoc and the cemetery above Normandy. And you think about the young men that stormed those beaches, and that 9 out of 10 of them in the first wave were killed, and there are 9,380 crosses in that cemetery. And I stood on Omaha Beach and with a surf at my back, looked forward and imagined what these young people must have seen and the tremendous sacrifice that they endured, because it was very perilous. And the assault on Point de Hoc to take out the gun emplacements up there, they're scaling a cliff under machine gun fire. I believe 96 of those Rangers were killed before they finally got up to the top and were able to take those gun emplacements. And, you know, that's true courage. You know, we call people heroes all the time. If somebody does their civic duty or catches a ball in a ball game, we call them a hero. Those aren't heroes. We're degrading the word.
Boy, I'll tell you, if that doesn't bring a tear to your eye when you're over there, I know I was standing at the cemetery in 2006 outside Maastricht, the Netherlands, and the cemetery is called Margarden, and that's where so many of our brave young people lost their lives at the Battle of the Bulge.
Mm-hmm.
And what is wonderful there, that the citizens of Maastricht and the little town of Margarden, every 4th of July they come by and put an American flag on every grave.
Wow. Yeah. You know, the thing about the cemetery at Normandy that a lot of people don't know is all the crosses face west.
Wow.
And that is so that they would be facing home.
Huh.
Because so many of those boys never got to go home.
Right.
They were buried on foreign soil. And the poetic nature of having those crosses face to the west is also something that catches you. The other thing about Europe that I found was, especially in Ireland and Northern Ireland, Scotland, is that people are so friendly.
Very.
There's so much more courtesy and just a different nature of the way that people interact with each other. And I really wish that we could gain that civility in our country and bring courtesy back and things that we have seemed to have lost our way on a little bit.
Well, amen to that. And they still read newspapers over there, too, which is good news for journalists in the UK, Joe Ferguson.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Joe, go ahead with the sheriff.
Sheriff, we learned this week that your deputies don't carry Narcan kits. Can you talk to me a little bit about the decision behind that and whether you are revisiting that subject?
Revisit it every day, Joe. The primary problem is that the Narcan that's available right now is not heat stable.
And explain to our listeners what it's
a drug
to reverse overdoses.
Yeah, Narcan, which for opiate overdoses,
okay.
It has great efficacy in bringing people back from overdoses. It works. There's no question about that. The problem is that the drug itself is not heat stable, and it degrades when it's exposed to extreme heat. Obviously, we have a lot of that here. And the nature by which we deploy our personnel doesn't lend itself. For instance, my son is a Tucson police officer, so he goes to a substation and can take Narcan out of a refrigerator, store it in his pocket for short durations, and then he can put it back at the end of the shift. Well, our people aren't deployed that way. The vast, vast majority of the time, because of the rural nature of where we police, paramedics are there way before my deputies anyway, and they're really the best position to implement Narcan. If they come up with a heat-stable version, there isn't a cost involved, so I have no objection whatsoever to doing it. I just want to make sure that what we have in our pocket actually works. Because we've set ourselves up if we have something in our pocket that's inert now and we're trying to save somebody and it does not work. The collateral thing is that the exposure, because you can get dermal exposure to opiates, for one of our people to overdose too. So I'm definitely in the camp of, yes, let's carry it, but let's make sure that we can do it in a way that would work.
But if there was a grant for a cooler that was plugged into the car or something like that where it could be stored, because you guys are out in some of the furthest reaches of Pima County, you'd be open to that is what I'm hearing.
Absolutely. If we can find a way to make it work, Joe, and that doesn't present a huge burden cost-wise to the taxpayers or our county, yes, there's absolutely no reason to be opposed to doing it on philosophical grounds or otherwise, because it may save one of my deputies as well.
How about this county budget? How does it play into your particular department, $1.35 billion with a B budget for Pima County?
Well, we're about roughly $152 million, and our budget stayed stable from last year to this year. I've got to give my department a plug on this, though, Bill, so bear with me a minute. But when I took office in January of 2017, we were projecting to be $6 million in the red. We just finished the fiscal year, the first full year, and we finished about $5 million in the black. Which is just a great turnaround. I'm so proud of the people because the commanders, first-line commanders, supervisors had to make a lot of difficult decisions. We had to tighten our belt, work smarter and harder than we did. And a lot of that, as I told the troops a year ago, we're going to go through some really belt tightening, but I want to leverage that toward compensation increases, which we did. So I think there's a good success story in that.
People in your department, I understand, are going to be making not only what's comparable, but maybe even a little more than other Pima or than other county sheriffs in the state.
I think we made a good step in the right direction, but let me be honest. Okay. I just don't think we could ever pay these people enough. I mean, I don't think there would be a threshold where I'd say, no, we're paying them too much. I love and respect these kids that are out there doing the job. My son's one of them for Tucson Police Department. 30 years ago, I was one of those kids, and so I know what it's like to struggle. And my wife and I got married in 83. She was a nurse. I was a police officer. We didn't make any kind of money. The first year we were married, the both of us combined income was $36,000. So I understand what it's like to struggle and the sacrifices these kids go under. But we've made good progress. We brought the bottom up for our corrections officers and our deputies. The corrections officers today would have seen a 11%+ raise in their pay, the bottom corrections officers. Our deputies got more than 12%, the bottom deputies. And I think it's about 65% of our department got greater than the 5% raise. We'll have another bump for the people in the middle of the pay range in January. So the totality of the people in the middle of pay range will be 7.6% by January. It's not perfect, but it was a step in the right direction, and it's what I could work through Mr. Huckleberry to finance.
But yet 120 Pima County deputies and corrections officers say they're owed $12.4 million in back pay.
That's back pay. That's in the rearview mirror. That was before I took office. I'm trying to move us forward. They certainly can litigate. I support that. I won't comment on their litigation. But that's in the past. I'm trying to drive us forward. I got to make sure that we're competitive in the marketplace for entry-level employees, but also that we can retain the best and brightest, the people that really provide great service to our community. And I'm working really hard with the county administrator and the Board of Supervisors to do just that. And I'm not the appropriating authority. That rests with the Board of Supervisors. If they were to give me $5 million and say, give everybody a raise, I'd be as happy as they were.
Joe, go ahead. We've got time for a couple more questions.
While we're talking a little bit about the budget, I want to know a little bit more about the decision by Tucson to send some of its prisoners to a different jail than yours. How does that impact your ability to maintain a jail if one of the communities has decided to go elsewhere with its prisoners?
You'd have to ask the city of Tucson about that decision. I know it was cost-driven. We have about 1,900 people in the jail this morning, space for maybe 2,200. But once we get up to about 2,000, we're really full. If they elect to send some people to, I guess, Santa Cruz County, and they think they can make that work with transportation cost, and it's more financially viable for the city of Tucson, that's a financial decision that they would have to make, and I wouldn't weigh in one way or the other on that.
What is life like in your jail? Do people have individual? I have not been there, so I don't know. I'm just going to imagine. What is their housing like there?
Well, I'm surprised that you've not been in jail, Bill. Well, knowing you as I do.
No, I have not taken a tour of the Pima County Jail.
You're welcome.
In other markets I have worked in, I have been in jails, not professionally, but not, of course, as an inmate. I'm just wondering. Yeah, are they like double, triple bunked? Or describe for me one of your cells.
Well, generally they're double bunked. We have pods, and the pods are based to a large degree on threat assessment. You know, what level of care the inmate needs and what level of threat that inmate presents. They have access to basically little iPads to interact with email and that. We provide a video visits. So let's say that your mother lived in Ohio or something. We can facilitate video visits. And again, our jail just underwent scrutiny from an outside entity. Mm-hmm. They came in and we opened our entire books up to them and said, okay, tell us how we're doing. And we just became nationally accredited, and we're the only jail in the state of Arizona to achieve that accreditation.
Really? And do they have television time?
There is day room time, yes, in the pods. And people say, well, you know, that's their prisoners. They shouldn't have any of this. The more that we can keep them busy doing things, mm-hmm. keep them active, the less mischief they get into and the less problems that we have with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it shouldn't be a punishment tour as much as it is that we needed to ensure social justice for all these people. And we try to strike a good balance between security of the inmates and making sure that we're treating them in an appropriate way.
Tom, do we have another call? Okay, let's take that right now. Is it Sean? Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, Mark. I'd like to say a huge thank you for bringing up the guys in World War II, man. That really, it plays close to my heart, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's it, man. That's all. I just want to say thanks to respect those men and what they did when those gates fell open. Takes huge heart, man. And you know who I am, and I don't want to, the political side of it, but to respect those men, I really do appreciate taking time out of your day to respect the men that did that.
Well, we should all, and fewer of them, as you know, Sean, are with us.
Know,
there's not a lot of them that experience that. And you know what? We're not doing a good job in our school system, in my opinion, in teaching history and teaching why we were there.
I believe those of us, in the words of Cicero, that don't know what happened before we were born continue to be babies forever.
Yep. Amen to that.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you very much, Mark.
That's a big deal to a guy like me. My grandpas, all three of my grandpas were over there, and I, just to say something every week about history is a big deal to me, as you guys know.
Well, you know, the other thing I witnessed over there is the hedgerow country of Normandy, and at how anybody penetrated those hedgerows. Mm. And you know, as you know, they flooded many of the fields there in preparation to try to defeat the landing. Many people don't know that Eisenhower almost called it off because it was so devastatingly going bad initially that Eisenhower almost pulled the whole thing, plug on the whole thing. But, you know, those brave kids kept fighting and fighting against the most unbelievable odds. And they did the right thing, and God bless them, and that we have that type of people that will be willing to make the ultimate sacrifice to liberate another country.
Very different generation, and for those of you that don't know the history of it, I mean, the lucky guys were in the front because they didn't know how bad it was. Imagine what it would be like to be 7 boats, 12 boats, or 20 boats back and see the devastation and still fight on.
Wow, yeah. It'd be horrible.
Ladies and gentlemen, I mean, we got it. We got a prayer to those men. Sir. They're gone now, and God bless them all, man.
Well,
thank you, Mark.
If I can, just for a second, Bill, give a plug to the First Responders Veterans Living Memorial in Oro Valley. That's a community project to design a
How's
veterans.
That going up there?
They're raising money. I'm very involved in that. It'll be at the Narana Park site. People can Google it, and I'd ask you to just donate anything that you can. This community-based, they're trying to raise about $2.5 million. This will be a tremendous asset to Southern Arizona because we're combining both first responders and veterans in one living memorial that have an education focus. It'll be in a beautiful setting in Nirvana Park site with the Catalinas behind it. I've seen the preliminary designs. It's just fantastic. It's one thing that I try to always plug when I get a chance.
All right. Well, I'm out of time, but I'm going to, since I'm the host of the show, I'm going to extend it another minute or so to ask you about your upcoming trip week after next, perhaps that will include a visit to the White House.
Select group of sheriffs, Sheriff Daniels from Cochise County, Sheriff Wilmot from over in Yuma County, myself and the president of the National Sheriff's Association have been asked to go to Washington, D.C. We're going to meet with the Director of Homeland Security, Secretary Nielsen, and some of her executive staff to communicate from a frontline perspective what's really going on the border. Let's get rid of the rhetoric and talk about what we need as county sheriffs. And also, I'll invite the Secretary to bifurcate, and I mean separate, the issue of illegal immigration from transnational crime. They are not the same thing from a public policy, public safety standpoint. In that, we have clearance to go to the White House. It's on our schedule. We don't know if we'll have a chance to meet with the president. But my job is to extend that that sentiment and that focus from a border sheriff's perspective, and also that the taxpayers of Pima County are shouldering too much of the expense for the lack of the federal government's responsibility to secure our border. And we're shouldering that expense, and we need a rail of funding to help compensate us for taking care of what really is a federal responsibility.
Did I see you at an event on Facebook that you were up with the governor yesterday, was it?
Yeah, that's unusual that the governor is thinking about Southern Arizona and inviting us up to the table. I'm very pleased. We have a good relationship with Governor Ducey. He's a good advocate for the border sheriffs. It was about the border strike force and him putting more money toward our state money toward interdiction of drug and human trafficking along the border. So the governor is a good supporter of border sheriffs, and I was happy to have the invitation to go up there.
All right. Sheriff, thank you very much. Always a pleasure to have you on the program, catch up with what you're doing, and glad you had a safe trip over there.
Thank you, Bill.
It sounds like it was a really transformative trip, to say the least. Thank you very much, Sheriff.
Thank you.
All right. Coming up, Jim Nintzel joins us telephonically from his office at the Tucson Weekly, and Joe Ferguson sticks around with me in studio. We're going to talk about all those initiatives. They turned in those boxes and boxes of signatures. This time around, a little bit different. They're going to be going over them with a little more of a fine-tooth comb, as they say. We'll talk to Mr. Nintzel about that right after this. Viral Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Viral Mori, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Viral Mori on the web at viroamori.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an Ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Welcome back. It is Mr. Jim Nitzel, who is the executive editor of the Tucson Weekly. Jim, how are you, sir?
Doing great, Bill. Just pulling into the offices here, getting ready to put out a few more newspapers.
You're getting ready to put out the well, it's not just the Weekly. You're very involved with the other Tucson local media papers.
Yeah, we've got Inside Tucson Business going to the press today, and then the Explorer and the Marana News going to the press on Monday, and then the Weekly on Tuesday. So yeah, we're getting deep into the production cycle. I can say, you know, the one night I spent in Pima County Jail, it was very nice.
It was
some time ago, I should say. I think it was 1988.
Yeah.
I spent a few hours before I was bailed out.
Really?
And, I had some leash law violation issues.
Well, that was my question. What was the violation that brought you to the jail?
I think there were leash law violations regarding a dog that I was having some trouble with, and then some. I think there might have been some failures to appear in court related to those.
Oh, okay.
You know, the usual. But it's a long story. I won't bore you.
Your friend is with us in studio, a man that you have known since you were really, well, many, many years ago at the Tucson Weekly, Joe Ferguson.
Good to hear your voice, Jim. Want to hear more about the story later, though.
Another time, over some beers.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about these initiatives. There are, as you pointed out in your longtime running column called The Skinny in the Weekly, there's really three that we're kind of looking at that are kind of the marquee issues, Jim. The Clean Energy for a Healthy Arizona Committee, the Invest in Ed Education Committee, and the Outlaw Dirty Money Committee. Now, yesterday we spoke with the vice president of the Arizona Education Association here on the program, and I said, are you confident that you have enough signatures? And she said, well, I don't really want to use the word confident. What's going on? Is it this new scrutiny?
Yeah, I think that's it. They passed a law last year saying that initiatives now had to undergo what's called strict compliance as opposed to substantial compliance. So if you have minor things out of place, they can start tossing your signatures. There's some question about the legality of this, and there's certainly going to be a court case should one of these get tossed somewhere along the line. But in terms of the new rules, you now see these guys walking around with their clipboards, but they've got these interesting folder covers on it that limit your how you can sign. You have to sign within a very small little strip that is available that you can see on the petition sheet below this sort of stencil that they're carrying around, because one of the things you can't do is go outside the lines, and the lines are fairly small. So they're doing all sorts of interesting steps to try to deal with the substantial compliance issue. Certainly these groups have turned in well over the minimum number of signatures, but I'm going to guess we're going to see an effort to go over them, as you said earlier, with a fine-tooth comb by opponents of these, and try to find a way to kick them off the ballot, and we'll see how successful that is. But I think maybe folks who like the initiative process may need to run an initiative to restore the old rules and kind of lock them into place under voter protection.
Like there are no abbreviations, which I learned yesterday from the lady at AEA, Ms. Garcia. You can't, for instance, abbreviate Phoenix, PHX. That would be tossed.
Exactly. It makes it a lot easier to come up with some very minor things to thwart the efforts of folks to put stuff on the ballot. It's interesting to note that when lawmakers passed this law saying that we needed these new rules to make sure the initiative process was, went under this kind of strict scrutiny, they did not extend the same rules to their own petition passing to get on the ballot. So I think there's more at work here than just a concern over following the rules.
Joe, did you want to add anything to this or before I move on to another topic?
Again, I'm just surprised again that recreational marijuana did not get the signatures it needed to get on the ballot again. This is, I think, the third time this has happened.
Jim?
I think that was because the money folks who really have worked to get that on the ballot, we're not going to be involved with it this time out. They're looking at a 2020 when they think a better a presidential election year will bring out more of their voters, and they just figured let it ride. So I think the folks who are passing these around were more the guys who probably were having trouble getting off the couch.
Joe Ferguson, in your column, The Political Notebook, which appeared today in the Arizona Daily Star, you talked about you were at the Tucson Gun Control Forum. How did that go on Monday?
You know, I think outside of one man talking about his experience in rural Oklahoma and killing his mother, it was a pretty, benign kind of experience where a lot of Democrat candidates talked about how they want to take back the House or take back the legislature and bring forward gun control measures. However, given that this one man talked about killing his mother at a Moms Demand Action forum, it was a bit surreal.
Kind of put a damper on things.
He was booed a lot.
Lots
of catcalls.
Oh.
And afterwards, he called the forum a meeting of gun haters. But noticed that, there were two officers in the back ready to protect anybody that came through the doors. He told me in an interview that, he wished that the same courtesy would be applied to schools across the Southwest.
Hmm. Jim?
So that's Bobby Wilson. He's running for a state Senate seat down in Legislative District 2, which I think Andrea D'Alessandro, Democrat, currently holds that seat. He's in a primary race against Shelley Keith, who ran for Congress a few years back.
Right.
He's a fascinating character. When he was 18 years old, he says his mother killed his sister, Joe?
He said she tried to kill him. It's not clear, because I read his book that's all on the subject, and it wasn't clear how his sister was shot in the head.
Yeah, so, and the house blew up. He says his mother was mentally ill. He was originally charged with this, killing his mother and his sister, as it all worked out in the end, he was not convicted of those crimes. His story was his mother went crazy and killed his sister and tried to kill him, and he was fortunate enough to have a gun and was able to kill his own mother before she could kill him. And it's a very strange tale. He's had some legal issues in Texas. He was an attorney and got his license suspended and was never able to reclaim it. Moved here to Arizona and now is a teacher and is making this run, his freshman run for the legislature. We'll see where this whole thing goes. I think he's probably got a tough time getting out of that primary election.
We'll see.
Certainly made for a colorful moment at the Moms Demand Action.
Let's see if we can squeeze a caller in. Chuck would like to join the conversation. Chuck, I've got 2 minutes.
Oh, thank you, Bill. I'll make this real quick. The proposition that's going before the people to tax the wealthiest people in TUSD to provide them with enough funds to do whatever they want to do. I am not one of those people in the top 1%. But I think this is so very, very unfair to ask these people, just because they're successful, to pay more money to educate our children in QSD. I mean, this is just a form of punishment.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, I'm not going to vote for this.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck. Chuck is referring Jim and Joe to the Invest in Ed initiative, which would increase taxes on single Arizonans earning more than $250,000 or couples earning more than $500,000 a year and use the new revenue to increase education spending. Jim, this is certainly going to be the initiative that will get the most attention.
Yeah, and, you know, this is certainly not just Tucson Unified School District. It's statewide. This is not just taxpayers within TUSD. It's an effort to inject more money into education, which I think even the governor admits is underfunded these days. You can see that he's been pushing for that pay increases for teachers after that movement came along, and he kind of switched gears from first saying it was something the state couldn't afford to something the state needed to do. You know, that's going to be one that's going to be fascinating to watch. People don't like tax increases, even though they may not affect them, as Chuck just pointed out. And I think the debate's going to be, you know, who needs to pay to get more money into education, and does it make more sense to go to a sales tax that everybody pays, or does it make more sense to continue to cut other areas of the budget, or how are we going to find money to actually deal with the fact that our teachers are leaving the state because they're not getting paid enough, and our schools have significant issues in terms of their the schools themselves, their repairs and our computers and our textbooks and everything else, well outdated. So I think that's obviously on the mind of a lot of people.
Jim, thank you very much. Get back to your work now, putting the papers together. Thank you.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. It's good to hear from you and Joe.
Thanks. And Joe, what's coming up in the Arizona Daily Star this weekend?
We've got a preview of the CD1 race, which is on the north side of town. Mm-hmm. We've got three Republicans vying to challenge Tom O'Halloran in November.
I met two of them just this week on the show, Wendy Rogers and Tiffany Shedd. Tiffany comes from a old line kind of family up in the Eloy area.
Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. And Colonel Rogers has a very interesting background, of course, too. And State Senator Steve Smith is the third candidate.
Correct.
There. So that's an interesting primary.
It's going to be very interesting. We'll see what voters decide in a couple weeks.
Joe, have a great weekend.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, coming up next, Weekend Watch with Matt Russell from Inside Tucson Business, one of the publications that Jim Nintzel is hard at work putting to bed, as they say, in the publishing business. I think that's a term that's used, isn't it?
Sure.
All right. We'll be right back. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for six new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Weekend Watch with Matt Russell is presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, just a three-hour drive to a beautiful portion of the southwestern United States. And starting on Monday, it's the Clay Festival. This is the big signature event of the year over in Silver City. Everything to do with pottery running from July 16th through July 21st. You can find out more about everything to do in Silver City and where to stay by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Let's welcome now the longtime host of Weekend Watch. He is the president and CEO of the award-winning Russell Public Communications, Inside Tucson Business, food and beverage columnist, and my friend, Mr. Matt Russell. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Happy Friday to you, Bill.
Very much so. I'm always ready for a Friday. What's this about Dillinger Brewing Company?
Yeah, well, you know, my weekend officially starts right about now, but the fun really gets underway at 5 o'clock tonight at the first Classy Fiesta at Dillinger Brewing Company on Oracle Road, in partnership with the popular beer blogger known affectionately as the Classy Alcoholic. Dillinger is hosting this event to promote diversity in the local beer-loving community. It was kind of inspired by the blogger's Mexican-American heritage as well as his travels to breweries all over the country where he's seen kind of firsthand how craft beer can build bridges among many demographics. So we can expect an evening of beer tastings, raffles, regional music, food from Doxy hot dogs, and a pinata at the Classy Fiesta tonight at Dillinger.
Get out the red, white, and blue. Tomorrow is Bastille Day.
Francophiles rejoice that Bastille Day is on a weekend again this year. Tomorrow is the big day that commemorates, of course, the storming of the Bastille. Several local restaurants are getting up for the celebration. For example, Guinea's French Cafe over on Prince Road. They'll be doing a special Bastille dinner with a soupe l'oignon, a beef bourguignon, and a bleu blanc rouge shortcake, while Feast over on Speedway will be offering a lot of great French wines, as well as special menu anchored by ratatouille, coq au vin, bouillabaisse, crepe Suzette.
Wow.
That's all I need to shout, Bill. Oh. It's Vive la France tomorrow.
Very impressed with the French vocabulary. What's new at Charo Steak?
Yeah, I love wine pairing dinners, as you know, and there's one happening downtown at Charo Steak on Sunday night that sounds like a bucket list item for sure, executive chef Gary Hickey has partnered with the family from Casa Madero Winery in Mexico for the occasion. And I'm told, Bill, that Casa Madero is the oldest winery on the continent.
What?
They produced their first wine in the year 1594.
Oh, my.
So if you're fortunate enough to get a spot, you'll enjoy a five-course meal complete with wine pairings from this historic vineyards for only $65 a person. You can reserve your seat by calling Charles Steak directly. Now, inquiring minds want to know, I wonder if they'll be pouring any of that wine from their 1594 vintage.
Kind of doubt it. Anyway, a week ago here on Weekend Watch, we announced about the Matt Russell cruise. Go ahead, Matt, tell us.
Absolutely. We're going to be setting sail from Rome in October of 2019 on an 11-night culinary and cocktail adventure through the Amalfi Coast and the Greek Isles. We have some wonderful food and beverage forward excursions that our friends at Bon Voyage Travel have put together for us, as well as some great activities on board. And of course, it's going to be on the Celebrity Crew's newest ship called The Edge. It really is a culinary and cocktail experience of a lifetime. And all the information you can find at bvtravel.com/MattRussell. We've already booked several cabins, and we're really looking forward to this adventure.
Great weekend to you, Matt. Thank you.
Cheers, Bill. Thanks.
All right, The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communication, wholly responsible for the content of the program. Just about out of time, Tom. All I have time for is to thank you today for doing everything that you do, and everybody here at KVOI. Have a great weekend.